Today the topic is wisdom. So good to have you here. This is East Lake, as I said, a church for everyone. Grab your notes out of your program. We've been in a series called Appetite for Destruction, and we've been basically peeking in on a journal that someone wrote, maybe 2,500 years ago. It was a king of Israel, and he had the heavyweight championship. He had the title belt. He was called the wisest man that ever lived. And at the end of his life, he writes a journal. It's kind of like a guy thing is a journal, girl thing is a diary. And he writes some reflections about what it was to fade away from God and how to get back to God. He writes in this journal. And Solomon, being the wisest man that ever lived, he's the king of Israel. And his dad was the famous guy. You've heard of him. He's a legend. His name was David. He got famous killing a giant. And Solomon, he sort of lived under the shadow of his father. So he's next in line, he's the king. And maybe that's happened to you before. You had a brother or a sister or someone in your family, and they just cast this huge, huge shadow, and you just sort of felt like you lived under that shadow. You kind of measured yourself based on them, and it can mess with your head, someone in your family, someone you work with. Or maybe you cast a big shadow. You wish it wasn't so big because people measure themselves against you. And so Solomon, he becomes the king, and it's after David, and everybody's like, trying to decide, is he going to be a good king or not good king? And one night, God comes to him and does something I think all of us wish God would. He says, Solomon, ask me for anything you want. And of course, we all know what we should say at that point. Like, if someone says, make one wish, and what's your wish? And it's like five more wishes. That's the automatic you're supposed to do. But Solomon says, I have such a daunting task, God, to try to be the king of these people. Would you grant me wisdom? Give me knowledge and give me wisdom, God. Which is the difference? Knowledge is things I know. Wisdom is how I apply it. Give me wisdom, God. Would you give me wisdom? And God says, I'll do it. And he's so impressed with him. He says, I'll even give you more than that. I'll give you lots of money and I'll give you lots of power. But if you want wisdom, I'll give you wisdom. And Solomon has this, like, tears it up the first part of his life. But then he starts to fade away. And as he fades away, the wisest man in the world makes some really poor choices. And, when we got together the first time, we had a teaching, and it was basically talking about how these appetites that we have, you can form an appetite for something, and it can be your whole focus, it can be your priority. And the first one was pleasure. And nothing wrong with pleasure. Pleasure is great, but when pleasure becomes my number one priority, when I organize my life so I'm always, like, it always feels good, there's always pleasure, that doesn't work, and here's why. Because I'll organize my life so I never have pain, and I never suffer. And the problem with that is there's lots of things in life that are worthwhile that are difficult and painful. One of my friends is pregnant. There'll be a baby coming soon, and that baby's going to cry at 2 or 3 in the morning and need to be fed. But it's painful to get up and feed the baby. And if your whole life is about pleasure, you just roll over and go back to sleep, and the baby starves. Your friend needs you. He wants you to go out and get a beer or a cup of coffee with him, and you're tired after work. You don't want to. It's painful. If you arrange your life to where everything makes sense for me, my priority is pleasure, then what you miss out on is some of the most important things in life. And we talked about that, as like orientate everything towards pleasure. We also talked about how the same thing can happen with success. So you want to be successful. You want to, like, your whole life, your appetite is for success. And by the way, think about appetites. When you have an appetite for something, and that's all you can think about, I was like jonesing for this pizza the other day at this one place. I just love this pizza. We had all kinds of things to eat at home. I could have went out and got anything else I want, but nothing was going to satisfy me. I didn't care what it took. I was going to go get this pizza that I want, because when you have an appetite for one thing, it can almost cause you to not have an appetite for another. And what Solomon did is he lost his appetite for God, and all of a sudden he lost his appetite for the things of God. He wanted to be very, very successful. Everything has to be successful. And he orientated his life. He built his life to have success, which there's nothing wrong with success. That's really good. But when everything is oriented towards success, when it's the filter of my life, when I decide when all my choices are based on, will this make me successful, that's a problem. Every good leader knows the secret is to give away the praise and take all the blame. But when you want to be successful, that's difficult to do, because it's much easier to blame other people so you don't get in trouble, so you can keep climbing the ladder. It's much more easy to take all the praise so they think you're all that. Because when your life is based, the priority of your life is to be successful, it's really super easy to use other people for what you need in life so you can get to where you want to go in life. And Solomon talks about that stuff. He has this great phrase he uses. He said, I like everything in my life was oriented towards pleasure. We talk about his 700 wives. That's kind of a trade-off. Lots of sex, but arguments too, so I don't know how wise that was. But, I mean, you know, everything he wanted, all the pleasure he wanted, all the success he wanted, this is the phrase he used. He said, I felt like someone that was running all the time and never catching what I was running after. He had the phrase, like a man chasing the wind. He writes in his journal. It's just like if you opened his journal, looked at it, and he would have said, I just felt like I was running all the time, running, and I never was able to catch what I was chasing. And you get the priorities wrong. And so he kind of boils it all down, and he says, here was the problem. Here's what happened in my life, is I ignored wisdom, I didn't grow in wisdom, and I sort of got on the wrong path. So write in your notes the big idea this weekend, write in your notes, just jot it down. We can gain or reject wisdom. And let me read to you how Solomon phrased it. As dead flies cause even a bottom of perfume to stink, so a little foolishness spoils great wisdom and honor. A wise person chooses the right road. A fool takes the wrong one. You can identify fools just by the way they walk down the street. Some things never change. Just by the way they're walking, you can see that they're foolish. He points out some things. I'm going to give you three of them today. And these are like three different types of people that reject wisdom. Okay, there's three different attitudes that we have, Solomon said. These are three ways you can show up in life. And let's look at the very first one. The very first one is when I'm naive. When I'm naive. And here's what naivety means. Naivety means I can't see the big picture. So it doesn't mean you're immature. Naivety doesn't mean that you're stupid. When you're naive, what it means is you can't see the big picture in life. You get onto a path, and you can't see where that path goes. You're a naive person. You can't see where it goes. You don't see the big picture. You know your intentions, but you can't see your impact. And he's reflecting on it at a time in his life because he's saying, I know what it is to be naive. He's reflecting on it. He's thinking back at a time in his life where he saw something like that. So let's read it together. I'll read it to you. While I was in the window of my house, Solomon talking, looking through the curtain, I saw some naive young men and one in particular who lacked common sense. He was crossing the street near the house of an immoral woman, strolling down the path by her house. So here he goes. He's on the path, and he's heading towards this girl. And Solomon says he has no idea where this is going to head. He's just kind of walking through it. He's just kind of, you know, he's going to go up to that girl, and he has no idea. He can't see the big picture. Later he'll describe it. He'll say it's like an ox being led to the slaughter, the naivety. And he's going to meet this girl, and he's talking about a kind of an extreme example here. He's talking about adultery, and he's saying, you know, it's really naive. You don't see where that's going. And I know lots of guys, there's like kind of problem in our culture. Lots of guys, they think they're really handsome and they're hot and they're all that. So they're out on the one-night stands and they get these girls and things like that. And in their mind, what they're thinking in their mind, they're thinking, well, that girl can't resist me and I'm just all that. And what they don't realize is the real truth in our culture is so many women are broken because of sexual abuse in their childhood, that they're just acting out a way of life that really the only way they know how to find some meaning and value. I don't care anything about that guy. He's not all that. I had a friend, a good friend, had a big church, very successful pastor. All kinds of people respected him, but he was naive. And he thought, gosh, girls are just attracted to me. And they like me, and he didn't have any idea. He didn't see the big picture that there was so many girls are broken, is what's really happening. It's something inside of them that's missing that sets them up to fail that way. But he didn't see any of that. He couldn't see the picture. He just thought he was like Superman. Everybody thought he was so cute, and they wanted to be with him. And so he got on this road eventually, and I saw it all come tumbling down. I saw him lose all the respect. Saw him lose the church. Saw him lose his job. It all went away. He was very naive. He didn't understand the big picture. In the scripture, it says that the man that commits adultery will be beaten with many blows. And I remember one night he called me, and we were talking on the phone. He said, Robin, in the Bible it says that the man who commits adultery will be beaten with many blows. And I understand that now. Because life had just pummeled him. Because he was naive. He didn't understand. And it's not like when you approach somebody too, you know, you try to say something to them because they're naive. Maybe talk to somebody and say, listen, be careful with Facebook. Don't be going back to your old boyfriends or girlfriends. They're like, no, get off it. That is so stupid. I mean, it's just social media. Of course, they might be naive and not understand that in some research that's been done, one third of the time that there's a divorce, Facebook is mentioned, that it was a part of the beginning of it, the string, the fading. And they're just naive. It's just social media. And by the way, it's not just big stuff. I had this one buddy that he worked in a lumber yard in a mill, and he was a green chain puller. So when the lumber came down this conveyor belt, it was all green and heavy. This dude was strong and fast. He was the best green chain guy they had, but he also liked to party. It wasn't just Friday and Saturday night. I mean, he was out every single night drinking with his buddies. Come party with me, come drink. So he'd be drunk and he'd get up late. And two or three times a week, he'd be late for work. But he was really a super good worker. He was the best green chain guy they had. And his foreman kept telling him, Chuck, you got to get to work on time. You can't keep coming in 20 half hour late, you know. He's warning him. One day his foreman came up and said, Chuck, listen, if you're late one more time, you're fired. And so he just gets on his best behavior, and you know, he gets home on time, and he gets to work on time for 4 or 5 days, and his buddy says, we're going out to the river. Oh, I got to go. And he goes out and ties one on, gets all wobbly, come home, go to sleep, doesn't wake up for the alarm, sneaks in about 20 minutes late, goes over to the green chain, starts pulling lumber. He looks up, and there's the foreman. He's got Chuck's check in his hand. He says, Chuck, I told you, if you were late one more time, you were fired. It's been nice having you. And Chuck tells me, he said, but. And the foreman said, no buts, Chuck. You're done. Nothing can happen. You just get naive about things. And Solomon says, you can be naive and not listen. And the only problem with it is that you just haven't been there before, or you didn't listen to someone they told you, and you didn't see the big picture. Now look at the second one in your notes. When I'm foolish. And it says, doing wrong is fun for the fool, but living wisely brings pleasure to the sensible. Now, this is different than naivety. The foolish person, they can sort of see the big picture because they've been on that ride before. Or they've known somebody that's been on that ride, or they've been a co-star in the movie. They've been through it all before. They know how the movie ends. They're not naive. They know they shouldn't be doing what they're doing, but they do it anyways, even though they know how it ends. That's the foolish person. Now, let me ask you a question. Is there anything that you're doing right now and you know you shouldn't be doing it because you know how it ends and you know you shouldn't be doing it, but you're doing it anyways? Because there's an attitude like, I'm going to do it anyways. Now, one of the ways we dodge the whole thing emotionally is we sort of rewrite the ending. When I first started out in ministry as a children's pastor, so around kids all the time, and I like kids, and so I was around kids all the time. And when you're around kids all the time, there's hundreds of them, you kind of get to know them, they know you, and they get comfortable with you. So I'd walk through the classes where they were, and the little ones, the fours and fives, they'd always run up to me. They do the same thing here. They always run up to me, and they always want to show you something. And a lot of times, you know, they've learned how to do a cartwheel or a somersault. And they're like, look at me, I can do a cartwheel, you know. So they come running up and they do their cartwheel. And this one girl, you know, like she's going to do her cartwheel, and she's over by this table, has all these Legos set up that this kid had made this stuff. And she goes to do her cartwheel, right, and she does her cartwheel, and she gets about halfway over, and she flips over, and her legs hit the Legos, and she smashes this stuff, and they knock all over the ground, and she lands on the ground, and she's all done, and she looks up at me, and she said, I meant to do that. You know, you rewrite the ending. I meant for that to happen. You know, someone backtalks their boss and they get fired and they're, oh man, I'm sorry you lost your job. And it's that, oh, I need to tell him off anyways. I feel so much better. Somebody messes up a relationship and they lose someone they really like and wanted to be committed to. God, I'm sorry it worked out that way. That's fine. I'm due for something new anyways. It was maybe meant to be. Are you rewriting anything? It just happens. You know how it's going to end, and you don't like the ending, so you rewrite the ending. I meant to do that. I wanted it to turn out this way. And it's not that you like it. It's just you won't stop. I won't stop. We don't stop. We have to rewrite the ending. Foolish people do that. They don't listen, and I'll sort of throw it open a little bit and let you look inside a little bit. I like to drink beer. I hope you do too. But I drink beer, and I don't think it's wrong to drink beer or drink. The Bible doesn't say that at all. It is wrong to get drunk, but I drink. And the problem with drinking is it can get a hold of you. It has in my family. There's alcoholics in my family. I've got friends, and I've just seen a lot of bad things happen with alcohol. But I'm not going to get unbiblical about it and, you know, swear it off as satanic, because it's not, if you can control it, and I've tried to control it. But about a year ago, I started noticing that about halfway through my day, really stressful time in life, I was just couldn't wait to get home to have a couple of beers. And really, from about 2 o'clock on, you know, I had like two things going in my mind, the work I'm supposed to be doing, and oh my gosh, I can't wait till I get home to have those beers that I, you know, have waiting for me. And it just got more and more and more and more to where it was like a lot, I was just, a lot of my mental power, a lot of my life was looking forward to having two beers when I got home. That's the way it was. And I started to wonder about that because it was creeping in a little bit. And then I don't like the grocery store beer, the 3-point whatever, so I got to go to the liquor store and get the better beer, the higher alcohol beer. I don't know if you ever go to the liquor store, but I hate going to that place because when you go there, you feel like a criminal. I mean, everybody in the liquor store is slinking around like they're doing something wrong. And, you know, yeah, the liquor stores here, I mean, they design them in a way almost that makes you feel like, you know, you're doing really something wrong to go in there. You know, I swear I'm going to go in there one day and yell at the top of my lungs, "We're not breaking the law. We're allowed to do this, you know. Turn on some freaking lights, you know." But anyways, you know, I go in there and get that beer. That's high alcohol content. So then I started upping the alcohol content a little bit because I have a rule in my life, just two beers. So, you know, then you start, yeah, I don't know if you've ever done this when it comes to rules. You know, you have like a glass, you drink your beer in, you can have two of them, and pretty soon I'm shopping for bigger glasses. I don't know if you've ever done that, but so you stay within the rules. Next thing you know, I'm filling up a wheelbarrow. That was just one, you know. So that's going on too, and that's messing with my head. And I got higher alcohol content beer. And then I'm waking up in the morning and I'm feeling really sluggish. Of course, I called it sluggish because I wouldn't want to say the truth and say hangover. So, you know, and you just start playing games like that. I don't know if you do that, but like you can do that. So I started waking up in the morning, I'm kind of got a hangover, and I got to go to work, and they're counting on me there, and I'm slow on the draw, and all this is going on, and I haven't even talked to God about it. I kind of feel he wants to have a conversation. I don't know if this ever happened. Like, think about this. Maybe in your marriage or with your kids or something, you know somebody wants to have a conversation with you, but they just sort of stand off to the side and look at you. Like they're like waiting, they're like sending you the message, you know, the Viking, like the mind meld, like we need to talk. And like sometimes it's like that with God, he doesn't say anything, but I knew he wanted to talk to me about it. So finally I'm like, "Well, God, you know, what do you think about my drinking? I'm drinking, and what do you think about my drinking?" And he was just really straightforward with me. Like, "What do you think I should do, God?" Here's what he said to me. He said, "Switch to light beer." And I'm like, you know, that's for girls. Light beer. Now, maybe you don't see God that way, but he has my best interests in mind. And I'm just saying, I said, "God, what do you think I should do?" He says, "Switch to light beer." And I'm like, "God, light beer? You know, way to ruin everything. I mean, no, I hate light beer." Although I was involved in a movie going on in my life that was going the same way every day, every day, every day, every day. And when I went to God to get some advice, he said, "Switch to light beer." So I went down, I bought the 6-pack of Coors Light, and man, is it nasty. It's like, seriously? Two of these? I could drink lemonade and have the same effect. I mean, and this is what I want you to hear, is that when I'm doing what I know I shouldn't be doing, I also have the awareness to change it. And that's what God was counting on. Now listen, it took me 8 months to make the switch. That's embarrassing. 8 months. For 8 months, I went back and forth, back and forth. That couldn't have been God. That definitely was not God. That couldn't be. He'd never talk to me like that. Light beer, light beer. 8 months before I made the transition. To where now, if I have a couple of light beers, I feel fine. I feel great in the morning. I'm not making up any excuses in my mind. Is there anything going on in your life and you know, and what Solomon's saying is that's when we're being foolish, because it doesn't have to be that way. Now look at the last one, is the mocker. The mocker. Mockers are proud and haughty. They act with boundless arrogance. The mocker. The mocker, they're just even a notch evolved from the person that's foolish, because they're very, 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 very super critical, the mocker. They're always critical of everybody else. Mockers are other people focused because they don't want to have to face their own guilt. Now, maybe you think guilt's a bad thing, but let me set something up for you to tell it's a good thing. So if you're a parent here today, or you have a little cousin or something like that, let me ask you, if you could invent something that they would wear on their wrist and it had a siren on it. So think about your kids now, especially as they grow up. It had a siren on it, and they would wear that, and whenever they started to do something that would hurt them, the siren would go off, and it would remind them, call your parents and see what they think about it. I mean, would you not stitch that into their skin and make sure that they had that? Because, like, they're going to get hurt, and the siren goes off, and they can't ignore it. It's right there, super, super loud. They can't ignore it, and it reminds them. And it won't go off until, call your parents and see what they think about it. And guilt is the siren of the soul. And God stitched it in. It's a gift. It goes off like crazy in our lives when we go somewhere that's going to hurt us. So we'll stop and check in with God and say, what's supposed to happen here? Why the siren's going off again, God? That's what guilt is. I know in our culture it says, oh, guilt's a bad thing. Push it aside. You're not going to guilt trip me in that. Guilt is a natural result that God put into our lives to save us, to give us a chance, to give us a pause. Sirens. Imagine if a police car came in here right now today and he threw his siren on. You couldn't ignore it. Just like going on like crazy. Now, here's why people mock. It's so they can get further away from the siren. Because if his car comes in and he just hits the siren right now, we can't think, you can't hear me, it ruins everything. And we're like, get him to turn that off, get him to shut that off. Or we just move away from it so we can't hear it. And that's what mocking does. Because when I'm super focused on everything about you that I don't like, I have to look at myself. And the siren, and here's the scary part. You can get so far away from the siren that you can barely hear it. The very thing that God gave you to alert you, whoa, hold up, stop, wait a second, you can barely hear it. And mocking is a way of not listening. Because I'm real busy on you. So Solomon says all that stuff. He doesn't leave us there. He says, now let's make a shift, and let me show you how to be wise. So look in your notes. The very first thing, three ways to gain wisdom. And the first one is you have to want it. Three ideas. How much better to get wisdom than gold and good judgment than silver? You have to want it. Age-old story, maybe a legend, happened in the Mediterranean. Famous, famous, famous teacher that was there. If you had lots of money, you'd have your child go to his school, just a one-on-one teacher, and he would teach about philosophy and mathematics and about life, and he would hold these classes. Really super, super famous guy, and you'd send your kids there in that day to go to his school, and long hair, looked the part, beard and everything, you know, he's the smart guy. And this one kid really wanted to be like, he really wanted wisdom, really try hard. And one day all the kids are off goofing around like that, and he sees the instructor down walking along the beach, and he goes down there and he goes, master, he goes, how can I be wise like you? Like, well, just tell me, how can I be wise like you? And the teacher doesn't even acknowledge him. He just picks up rocks and he's throwing them into the water. Didn't say one word to him. And he's like, what the heck, you know? He keeps following him along. He says, please, please tell me, how can I be wise like you? How can I get wisdom like you? And the master, who's got this big toga on, gathers it up like this and puts it in a knot, and he starts walking into the water. And the kid's like, what the heck, you know? So he follows him. He starts following him into the water. And he gets deeper and deeper and deeper. And pretty soon, they're like pretty high. He's like, master, what? Are we going to learn something out here? Is this an illustration? What am I supposed to know, master? And they're like up to their shoulders. And all of a sudden, the master turns and he grabs him by the shoulders and he plunges him underneath the water. And the kid's underneath the water, you know, and he's like, can I open my eyes? Is there something under here I'm supposed to see? He's like, what is it? What's it all about? And he's got him down there, you know, he can't breathe. He's holding his breath. He's like, you know, he's down. And then he starts to realize, wow, God, you know, let me up. I can't breathe, you know. And the master's got him even firmer. He's holding him down there, and the kid starts to squirm and squiggle, and he's yelling. He's like, I can't breathe. You know, he's yelling, like, get me up out of here. And the master just got him like that, and he's holding him there. And the kid's like, he's going to kill me. He's drowning me. He's going to kill me. And at the last second, he turns loose, and the kid comes flying up out of the water. By that time, the master's walking back to the shore. And the kid comes roaring out of there. Who do you think you could have killed me in there? What are you doing? And the master turned to me and said, when you want wisdom as bad as you just wanted air, you'll be on your way. You do have to want it. You do have to decide at some point, it's the priority. I want it. Now, the second thing is to watch for it. When I became a Christ follower at 20 years old, Jim Meisner, and you know, to see someone in your life that can teach you about wisdom, Jim was 30 years older than I was, had a white head of hair, was completely different than me in every single way, and I met him in church, and I started to watch Jim Meisner. And the reason I started to watch him was that he scolded me. I lived in a house with a bunch of other single guys, and Jim was the person that was in charge of our house. You know, we just had this big rental, and he was the guy that was in charge of it. And we were over at this girl's house, and I picked up this girl, and I threw her onto the couch, just kind of goofing around with her. And Jim pulled me aside. He said, "That's not the way we treat young ladies." And I was like, "Well, maybe that's not the way you treat young ladies, but it's the way I treat you. Like, who do you think you are getting all up in my, you know?" And he said, "Well, I just want you to know that when you start to follow Jesus, things change." And so I started to watch Jim. He sang at church. Which for me, I don't know if you're like this, you come in right now and the guys start singing, they're great, and it's like a little embarrassing to sing, you're not sure if you could sing, you're not sure if you have a good voice, and let me just tell you, I'll set you free, you don't, you suck. So, you know, you just don't sing good, but that's okay, you know, because that's why we get to come in here, and they sing and we sing with them. And I went to church and I was just embarrassed to sing, and I saw Jim over there and he was just howling, singing to God. He would lift up his hands. You know, one of the first guys I saw lifting his hands, I mean, the first time I saw him lift his hands, I was like, what? You know, somebody's got to, like, I watched him. He gave to God with his finances. He was real faithful that way. He just, money was no big deal to Jim. A very, very, very generous guy. I watched when his buddies would call. Someone would call Jim, gosh, late on a Friday night. Emergency, a couple of my guys crapped out. I need some help moving tomorrow. Jim was there. I watched how he treated women in the church. I just watched Jim Meisner. I watched him, and it changed who I was. Because what I saw is that the difference between us, when I really thought about it, I would really rather go the way he was going than the way I was going. Now, part of following Jesus is to find someone that's a little further down the road than you, watching them. How do they live their life? How do they treat women? How do they conduct their finances? How do they conduct themselves with their sexuality? What do they do about church? Like, what is their life about? Because they're further down the road than you. One of the reasons we have this, to be a church for everyone, is so as people grow, there'll be some of you would be willing to be watched by others, that they'd watch how you live, and that would sort of pave the way for them. Because you have to see somebody. For me, it was Jim Meisner. Who can it be for you? And who would you, and I'm not talking about stalker weird stuff, but like, who would you allow to watch you from a safe distance? But I mean, to watch how you walk with God. Because you got to see it somewhere. And then here's the third thing, write in your notes, you have to work for it. Look for it as hard as you would for the silver or some hidden treasure. It'd be nice if there was a pill. It'd be nice if you could just order it off the TV late at night for $19.95. That'd all be so cool. A special hat just makes you smart and wise. But the truth is, it takes effort. Repeated effort to become a wise person. And really what it is, it's about where you stand with Jesus. In fact, the response today, write in your notes, someone is better than some way. Listen, this is important for you to catch this today, because the last time we'll talk about Solomon. Solomon didn't wake up more stupid every day. And Solomon didn't wake up a little stupider every day. Solomon woke up every day a little farther from God. And the farther he got away from God, the wisest man in the world made really poor choices. He faded. The person that came to him in the very beginning, the someone, said, here, I will be with you. We will be wise together. And he faded away from him. And the graphics, our graphics guy, Brad, put together sort of an illustration. And I'm gonna show you that first, but let's look at the scriptures. We'll look at those real quick, and then I'll show you these illustrations. The first one, in him, all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. So it's talking about Jesus there. And then look at how Jesus phrases it, because this is really good, this next scripture. Jesus answered, I am the way and the truth and the life. Now, let me show you a couple of visual aids on how fade happens, and you can just sort of see how this is working for you. So here's the first one right here. That's an aerial view. That's like our graphics guy idea of a person right there. That's apparently that guy. He's a bald guy. So, and there's a path. He's right, getting ready to go on that path. So there he is right there. Now look at the next slide. The fade starts to happen. And notice where the fade starts to happen. It happens while he's still on the path. It's not like you leapfrog a long ways away. Like you're on the path and you start to move over. Now you're driving by Braille. You know, you're over on the other side. You haven't crossed the line yet. The fade begins while you're on the path. You don't all of a sudden wake up like way over there. There's the fade. Now it's starting to happen. Now look at the next slide. Now I want you to notice the trajectory, because the danger is when you start to fade, it feels so slight. I haven't talked to God for a while. I haven't seen my Bible in about a month. Oh, it's just a little white light. It's a small fade. It's like, I don't even know if it's that big a deal. I'm not even sure I believe I have to live that way. Anyways, I can just change tomorrow. It's like a slight fade. But the problem is the trajectory of it. Because look, a small fade, look how far away you are towards the end. Now let's see the next slide. This is good. Now check this out. Now this is the important thing to see, is that when you, and this is what Solomon is saying. He's saying when you're on the other path, not only do you go quite a ways away as you go, there's things that you experience on the other path that God never intended for you. You're not prepared for them. They probably don't even fit nor match you. I'm not talking about just sinful things. That's not your path, but you're still going to go through. When you jump on a highway, that highway is going to take you through various cities, and you're going through that city because that's where that road goes. So when you fade and you're on that other path, you go through those events. Now, the problem is, as you step onto the path, you can't see those. You don't look down the road and say to yourself, there's a divorce on this path. You don't see that. You're not supposed to go through that. That isn't like the plan at all. But it's on the path that you've chosen. There's no getting out of that. You are going to go through that path. And you'll go through everything on it. Now, let me tell you the good news. Because logically what we think is I could get all the way back to the very, very, very beginning again and find Jesus back here so I can get on his path. But here's the truth. He goes where you go. And if you're on that path, he's on that path. If you're supposed to go to Ogden and you head to Provo, Lord bless you, you head up down there, he's down there. You don't have to get anywhere. The moment you decide that you want to be with him, he's right there. There's a story I've told you before about the man that hired the person to guide him, and up and down all through the mountains, a great trip. And then he gets to the end of the mountains and he's standing right at the desert and there's no road. He's like, what the heck, man? I paid you a lot of money to get me where I'm going, and now there's a desert here, and you obviously took us to the exact wrong place. There's not even a road here, man. And the guy looked at him and he said, I'm the road. And he started walking. And Jesus said, I'm the way. And he's walking. It's not about wisdom. It's about how close are you to him. Solomon didn't get up every single day a little more stupid. He got up a little further away from God and sacrificed wisdom.